Did you know we have completely ad-free early access to all of our episodes? Well, we do. Not only that, but we have dozens of bonus episodes waiting for you. Head on over to patreon.com/ghosttownpod, and you can check it out for 7 days absolutely free. That's patreon.com/ghosttownpod. Did you know we have completely ad-free early access to all of our episodes? Well, we do. Not only that, but we have dozens of bonus episodes waiting for you. Head on over to patreon.com/ghosttownpod, and you can check it out for 7 days absolutely free. That's patreon.com/ghosttownpod. Into the Woods. I'm Jason Horton.
I'm Rebecca Lieb.
And this is Ghost Town.
I'm going to hike on the Long Trail. These were the last words from Bennington College sophomore Paula Jean Weldon, a now legendary figure in the world of the small liberal arts college, and of course among true crime enthusiasts everywhere. Puzzling, nuanced, detailed, mysterious, and even a bit occult, her strange disappearance is without a doubt Bennington's most infamous unsolved mystery, if not one of the top in New England. A lover of nature and adventure, Paula Jean Weldon's passion for Connecticut's natural beauty led her to understand the East Coast wilderness through the lens of fine art. After she graduated Stamford High School in 1945, Weldon enrolled at Bennington College in Vermont as an art major with a minor in psychology. In the fall of 1945, she moved into the Dewey House, a colonial-style dormitory on college grounds, and one that is, interestingly enough, still standing and still a dorm today. Paula quickly made friends with her classmates, becoming known for her outgoing personality, her intelligence, and her love of hiking and exploring. As Paula settled into her new life as a college student, she got a part-time job at the Bennington College Dining Hall, and in her free time would often hike the winding trails around the college with groups of friends or alone. Before her hike, the 18-year-old sophomore first went to her dorm room to change out of her work clothes, conversing for a while with her roommate, Elizabeth Johnson. She told Johnson that she was all through with her studies and she was ready to take a long walk and headed out around 2:45 p.m. Johnson added that her roommate was wearing a distinctive red coat with a fur collar, jeans, and lightweight sneakers. She packed no bag, took no extra clothing, and did not take any extra money. From all appearances, according to Johnson, Weldon did not expect to be gone more than a few hours and was looking to get out into nature to uplift her mood. According to Danny Fager, the gas station owner who worked across the street from the college gates, it was a crisp 50-degree afternoon when he spotted a blonde, slight, red-coat-clad young woman running up the side of a gravel pit near the college entrance and then running down it again. Then she went out of view. Later, search parties would call in a bulldozer to sift through the gravel pit on the off chance that she had been buried alive, though no evidence of that nature was ever found. Just before 3 p.m., Lewis Knapp of Woodford told authorities that he picked up a girl hitchhiking on Route 67A just outside of the college entrance. His description of the girl matched Weldon's. When climbing into his truck, she said, Weldon nearly slipped, warned her, quote, "Be careful." No further words were spoken between them until Knapp let her off near his driveway, which was on Route 9 near the Long Trail, where she had told him that she wanted to go. After thanking Knapp for the ride, Weldon headed for the trail. From this point, Weldon either hitchhiked or walked the rest of the way to the start of the trail in Woodford Hollow. We know she got there safely, or we strongly believe this. A group of hikers and college classmates of Weldon spotted her walking the trail as they were leaving. According to these friends that she saw along the trail, Weldon approached them and asked them a couple questions, after which she walked north down the Harbor Road part of the trail, a trail area that I want to emphasize was a very popular route. With darkness descending around 4:15 to around 4:30 and the temperature quickly dropping, Paula Jean Weldon was quickly becoming unprepared for an even light and easy hike. Several other Woodford residents claim to have seen her in the vicinity, a camp a little bit further down the trail, but after that, Paula Jean Weldon was never seen again. When she failed to return that evening, Elizabeth Johnson first thought that maybe she missed her roommate post-hike and that she was simply studying at the library. But as the hours went on, she got more and more concerned. The next morning, she informed Bennington authorities that her roommate had not come home the night before. College president Lewis Webster Jones called Weldon's parents to see if she had gone home for the weekend. Weldon's mother reportedly collapsed from shock and was confined to her bed when she heard that her daughter was missing, while her father, W. Archibald, headed straight for Bennington to commence a search for their missing daughter. Weldon's father arrived in Bennington and immediately organized a large group of volunteers, including local residents and members of both Bennington College and nearby Williams College. This was such an emergency that classes at Bennington were actually suspended that day so that all the students could participate in the search. By the evening of December 2nd, however, the college students had reportedly become frustrated with what they thought was an incompetent search by those involved, and they shared their criticism with Weldon's father and President Jones. Not only that, students noted just how cold the nights were. They were getting down to 9 degrees, an unforgiving temperature for a young person on a hike in light clothing. Remembering that their friend had always wanted to visit the Everett Cave on Mount Anthony, another trail nearby, a guide and some students headed to the cave area that afternoon, but unfortunately found nothing there. After that, a local taxi driver named Abe Ruskin stated that he had taken a student to the bus station on Sunday afternoon from Bennington, but couldn't positively identify the student as Paula. If it was Paula, there were several buses she could have taken to Pittsfield, New York City, Albany, or Burlington. The clerks at the station didn't remember anyone of her description, but added that it was also a busy day. Weldon's father, now desperate, used his reputation and influence to call in state police from New York and Connecticut to help. At the time, Vermont did not have its own state police force, and the search for Paula Weldon was unfortunately disorganized and lacking in resources, spread thin across multiple departments and jurisdictions. Vermont did have a state investigator by the name of Alamo Franzoni, and within days of Paula's disappearance, he was put on the case. Franzoni, along with representatives from the New York and Connecticut police departments, formally took over the search from Bennington College. Those who had been volunteering, combing the wilderness for Paula, switched their efforts to raising money for a reward. Collectively, they raised $5,000 for any information that would lead to Paula Jean Weldon's return. But as days went by, the investigation yielded no results. That being said, that didn't mean that there weren't bizarre leads. A claim by a waitress in Fall River, Massachusetts, said that she had served dinner to an agitated young woman at a table who matched Paula's description. This lead struck her father as so promising that he disappeared for 36 hours in order to follow it, without telling anyone where he went until he returned to Bennington. This behavior by Weldon's impassioned father led some to believe that he might have had something to do with his daughter's disappearance, a theory made even more compelling by the facts surrounding the circumstances that occurred the week before Paula's disappearance. Like Elizabeth Johnson told investigators, Paula was expected to go home to Connecticut for Thanksgiving, but she called her parents and told them that she would actually be staying in Bennington. Despite her original statement seeming like nothing was wrong, Johnson actually retracted her statement and said that Paula and her father actually had a falling out not long before her disappearance. Thinking that Paula would return, she didn't want to further estrange or strain Paula Jean Weldon from her father. But she did admit, at this point in the investigation, that Paula Jean Weldon had been depressed and that likely it had something to do with her family and Thanksgiving break. Interviews with Paula's family and friends didn't offer much clarity. Paula's father had related that all of Paula's letters home had been cheerful, and that there was no conflict at the center of her arrangements to stay on campus for Thanksgiving, and that he could not imagine why she would leave the campus. When asked about any boyfriends Weldon may have had, her father told police that she had previously made some social acquaintances with a few young men at Williams College in Massachusetts, but that she was not seriously dating any of them. Friends of Paula's sang a different tune, however. Like Johnson, they stated that the days before her disappearance, Weldon had seemed increasingly depressed, so much so that they were perhaps worried. But Weldon's father denied these claims vehemently, hammering home that it was probably teenage boyfriend trouble. What was more suspect than what Weldon's father said was his vehemence. He really had no evidence to substantiate his theory. Well, sorry, one piece of light evidence that he was told through a clairvoyant. This clairvoyant claimed that a man's involvement was part of Paula's disappearance. Weldon's father ran with that, thinking that it was probably something romantic in nature. On December 16th, Paula Jean Weldon's father packed up all of his daughter's belongings and returned to Connecticut, but not before publicly criticizing Vermont for its lack of a professional police force. He skewered the school, the investigative work, and was mystified at the fact that there had been no records kept for the first 10 days of the investigation, which, I will say, is pretty shocking. His anger was certainly not lost on the army of reporters who descended from all across New England onto the small college town to cover the story. But as soon as Weldon left, the out-of-state reporters also cooled off on this missing persons case, although local papers continued to cover the story as front-page news until late December. Volunteer search parties would also continue to make expeditions on the long trail, hoping for something, anything that might help the case. But by early January, low morale and harsh weather conditions ended the search for Paula Jean Weldon. Any evidence of the missing co-ed, if it ever existed, was buried under the thick Vermont snow. Or was it? More after this break. Months after Paula Jean Weldon went missing on an afternoon hike at Bennington College's nearby Long Trail, the case went totally cold, figuratively and literally, as the harsh winter made it near impossible to continue search efforts. But then a suspicious tip came in from a campground frequented by tourists in Charleston, South Carolina. A woman who bore a striking resemblance to Paula Jean Weldon signed in as Mary Weldon. The police were contacted by the campground staff, but the woman was initially combative and unwilling to cooperate with authorities. Eventually, police were able to convince Mary Weldon to speak on the phone with Paula Weldon's mother, who confirmed, unfortunately, that the woman was absolutely not her daughter. Years passed, and no other substantial leads materialized. That is, until 1955, when a lumberjack who had been in Bickford Hollow near the Long Trail where Paula Weldon had disappeared decided to speak up. He said that he had followed a girl fitting Weldon's description into the woods that day. More importantly, he told a friend that he knew where Weldon's body was buried. It was at that point that the interest in Weldon's case had been revived, and the man was extensively questioned by then-village attorney Reuben Levin. But, unfortunately, it turned out to be another dead end. The man admitted perversely that he had been joking and had no knowledge of Paula Jean Weldon or her whereabouts. The case remained unsolved for 13 years after that, until an unidentified skeleton was found near the trail. Investigators excitedly awaited the results of an analysis of the bones, only to find that they were too old to have possibly been Weldon's. But this opened up a whole new and different and later line of discourse around the case, and theories abounded. The public got specifically reinvigorated in the case when New England author and occult researcher Joseph Citro weighed in, coining the term, quote, the Bennington Triangle, to describe an area of southwestern Vermont within which five people disappeared between 1945 and 1950, of course including Paula Jean Weldon. He links these disappearances to a special energy that inhabits the specific wilderness area that attracts visitors from everywhere, and I mean everywhere, including, Citro says, different realms and outer space. Citro thinks that, like many of the other missing persons around Bennington, Paula Weldon was likely snatched up by unknown and extraterrestrial forces. Fast forward to June 6, 2024, when construction worker Ben Britch and his co-workers were doing some foundation work at one of Bennington, Vermont's oldest standing properties, a sprawling post-colonial home. While digging, Britch came across what appeared to be a human femur lodged vertically in the packed ground a few feet under the surface. Bennington detectives and the assistant medical examiner arrived on the scene, as was the state archaeologist called in to assess the bones and surrounding dirt and debris. Authorities thought perhaps that the remains were human and transferred them to the Vermont Medical Center in Burlington for further examination and genetic testing. Because of the property's age and Bennington's long-standing history tied back to the Revolutionary War, it was very possible that the remains and artifacts around it were simply that, pieces of long-forgotten history. But before authorities confirmed that the remains found were not human, for a short time, people were talking about Paula Jean Weldon once again. So what exactly happened to Paula Jean Weldon? As the investigation continued to yield no answers, the mystery around the case deepened, and various hypotheses emerged to explain what the hell happened on that fateful day in December 1946. We're going to discuss some of them now. Theory number one, foul play. Many believe Weldon may have encountered a malevolent individual or group of people during her hike, or maybe even an opportunistic criminal or an assailant. Still, there are no signs of struggle or violence found along the trail, making this theory kind of inconclusive. Theory 2, accidental fall. Given the rugged and sometimes treacherous terrain of the long trail, some think that maybe Weldon had an accident, specifically in the cold. But still, she had done the trail before, it was not a super rigorous hike, and there are no signs of this anywhere. Also, no body was ever found. It's certainly possible that she stumbled, fell, or became disoriented, leading to a tragic end. Yet again, the extensive search efforts would have produced something, we would think, or any kind of evidence of such an accident. Theory 3, an animal attack. Vermont is, of course, home to a variety of wildlife, including bears, mountain lions, and other potentially dangerous creatures to humans. The theory of an animal attack posits that Paula might have encountered a wild animal during her hike. They may have hurt her, eaten her, taken her, leading, of course, to her disappearance. Now, again, we might find something if that were true, probably bones, debris, signs of an attack, but we have not. Theory number 4, voluntary disappearance. Perhaps one of the most intriguing and controversial theories suggests that Paula Weldon chose to disappear of her own volition. Some believe that family troubles, a la the Thanksgiving drama, potential romantic engagements from that clairvoyant, or a desire for a new life, a life outside of her collegiate existence, led her to vanish from her old life and start one anew. Theory number 5, supernatural or paranormal explanations. Of course, in the absence of concrete answers, some have turned to a supernatural or paranormal explanation. Think abductions, ghosts, strange phenomena. Of course, she could also be a victim of the cursed Bennington Triangle if you believe in it. All of these mystical theories are part of the New England landscape and lore, and which, of course, are fun to think about, are some of the more out there discussions happening, and of course, that means they're my favorite. Also, number 6. A favorite of mine, conspiracy theories. Paula Weldon's disappearance has, of course, given rise to many conspiracy theories, suggesting abuse or maybe incest from her father, or maybe even her involvement in a secret government experiment or even espionage, just due to the proximity of the nearby military installations to Bennington College during World War II. These are also, of course, very exciting and very far-fetched, but again, who knows? They weren't too far away from the place that she spent every day of her young collegiate life. Thousands of Redditors weigh in on this case every week, even now, so I'd be remiss if I didn't share some of their reactions to this now long, cold case. From ClumsyZebra80, it sounds like she made a really strange decision to go hiking near sunset in December in improper clothing and died as a result. I think the mystery is why she made such an odd choice. She was from Connecticut and living in Vermont, so she was no stranger to winter. Interesting. From Ambient Goth. In my opinion, her decisions sound like she wanted to take her life in a way that gave her, or her family, plausible deniability, since the stigma around suicide was still quite active in that time period. Making it look like a misadventure would prevent her family from being judged by the public. From Puzzled C. I wonder if it was less of an active decision to take her own life and more that she just didn't care what happened. When I've been at my worst with depression, I have sometimes felt I just needed to get out, to be away from home. The feeling of, quote, I just can't stand these same four walls anymore. From Free Fallen 002, I don't see it mentioned anywhere here. I thought there was suspicion of there being a mountain lion in this area and possibly responsible for three missing persons. An interesting note to the case is that Weldon's disappearance inspired several novels, including Donna Tartt's first novel, The Secret History, Hilary Waugh's novel, Last Seen Wearing, and possibly Shirley Jackson's novel, The Hangs Man. Tartt attended Bennington College herself, and Jackson lived there at the time of the disappearance, as her husband was on the faculty there. But it's important to leave with something positive about Paula Jean Weldon's enduring, mysterious case and legacy. Her father's very vocal criticisms of the state of Vermont's lack of proper resources was a factor in the creation of the Vermont State Police in 1947. Specifically, they have been responsible, by statute, for all wilderness search and rescue missions. Though Paula Jean Weldon's case remains unsolved today, it has become an incredibly powerful catalyst for justice in this way. The tragedy of Paula Jean Weldon's disappearance has fortunately brought forth peace, closure, and justice to so many other Vermont families. For that and many other reasons, it will not soon be forgotten.